All right, we are now recording. Thanks everybody for joining us. This is the Open Teleconference for February 2021. We are talking today about transfer, which is a NISO recommended practice, and you will learn all about it from our guests. I just want to say a few words about our session format. This is it's a teleconference, as was saying the guests. It started this way many years ago at NISO. It's one of the oldest events we've been running at NISO, and it's always been just a teleconference because it is meant to be pretty informal. And we're glad that you've been able to dial in.
Very annoying that.
If you press star 6 on your phone, that will allow you to mute your line if you don't have a mute button. If you do have a mute button, use it, and you can always unmute it. But star 6 will allow you to mute your line and unmute your line. Otherwise, I might be muting your line for you and then opening it up when we're done with our discussion. So it's really informal. I'll be talking with our guests about the project they're working on and involved with, and we open the line for any questions or discussion from participants at the end. So thanks again for that. The session is being recorded, and at the end, I will shut off the recording in case there are questions that you would like to ask but you don't want to have recorded, which, you know, sometimes there are. And then there's also time for us to discuss anything about NISO. If you have questions about NISO in general, there's an opportunity for that as well. And I think I forgot to introduce myself. I am Nettie Lagasse. I'm the Associate Executive Director at NISO, and I work with the folks on transfer, so I'm very pleased to have them today to talk about their work. I'm going to introduce all of you, and so be ready to introduce yourself and say how you participate in transfer. There's three of you today. Linda Wabi, can you introduce yourself and say what you do and what you do with transfer?
Hi, Nettie. Thanks. I'm Linda Wabi, and I work for a consortium in California called SCELC, and I serve on the working group for transfer. And one other NISO committee as well, which is CIRU.
Yep, that's great. Thanks. Heather, how are you participating today?
Great. Hi, I'm Heather Staines. I'm currently working as an independent consultant, and I've been participating in transfer for quite some time. I don't know exactly how long, long time.
I think even before I joined NISO, I believe.
I don't know. Since before NISO, definitely. And I'm currently serving as the publisher subgroup chair, even though it's been a little while since I've been a publisher. I'm still a publisher at heart. So.
Great, thanks. And Gael, can you say a few words about
yourself? Hello, everyone. Thank you, Nettie. So I'm Gael Biquet. I'm the director of the ISA International Center, and I serve on the working group or in the transfer group as well. And the ISA International Center has been involved for a few years because actually we took over the ETAS service, and we'll talk about that a bit later, which is now hosted by the ISA portal or on the ISA portal.
Great. So good. So all of you have been involved with transfer for some time, so you are transfer experts, and happy to have you on the call. So maybe we could start with the basics. What is in transfer? What is transfer? And who should read and use it? Linda, do you want to kick it off?
I'll kick it off, and the rest of us can add. Thank you again, Nettie. All of us on the working group are very passionate about transfer. I've also been on the working group for quite some time. And it's a set of guidelines, so it's a NISO recommended practice, and the purpose of which is to ensure continuity of access to journals by subscribing institutions whenever the title transfers from one publisher to another. So, and it's kind of cool. You alluded to the fact that it has a history outside of NISO, and some people may be aware that it was created by the UK Serials Group, and I think in 2008 2006, and they created what was then called the Enhanced Transfer Alerting Service, which Gail said, you know, is now hosted by ISSN. In 2015, transfer was transferred to NISO. So, but it's written for e-journal publishers and societies, but it's also useful to librarians and consortia involved in negotiating e-journal agreements, and we'll have more to say about that a little bit. And so journal publishers who follow those guidelines are considered transfer compliant. And the guidelines address issues of concern to both the transferring and receiving publisher and sort of detail, well, how to communicate and transfer digital assets and subscriber lists and that sort of thing. So the journal publishers are probably the primary audience, including societies.
Yep. But the benefits would obviously be to libraries and probably other publishers as well, right?
Right. And yeah, if, right, we can, I mean, I think we have other questions that go into more detail, but It was created by people involved in the work. So you could see that there's representative on the working group from, I'm representing kind of the librarian zone, and there are representatives for publishers, representatives for societies and the ISSN Center. And so it's very practical. So it's a short list of guidelines, only really a few pages long. And so it's guidance for what publishers need to communicate and decide about all the topics covered.
Yeah, I'm holding it.
And anybody else want to chime in?
It's 17 pages long, but at least half of that is just our, you know, our cover page and our table of contents. And then there's a glossary at the end.
Right.
So the actual transfer bit is really six pages. So hopefully that's...
So the receiving publisher roles and responsibilities, that section, it's like 1.5 pages. So yeah. If you're receiving publisher, it's kind of large type. Yeah.
Maybe I can add just a little bit.
Yeah, Heather, how does transfer help a publisher? What's the value for a publisher?
Yeah, so I first got interested in transfer even before I was part of the group. I was working at Springer SBM, which is Springer prior to becoming Springer Nature. And I was in a group called eOperations, and one of the activities that fell under our group was transferring content. So we responded to RFPs from societies that were going out to tender, and we did presentations. And then after, agreements were signed, we went through the entire transfer process. And so it seemed very obvious to me, like, yes, if there's going to be a smooth transfer from one publisher to another, these things should be done. But, you know, it was something that came about because it wasn't always apparent that what things should be done. And and publishers have their, you know, subscribers, and they have their consortia relationships, and they have, you know, their different technologies that they integrate with. And I could imagine if you're a publisher and one of your societies is transferring away, that you may not be the happiest about that. And even though you might not have kind of bad intentions, it might not rise to the top of your priority list. You do all of these things that are kind of considered in the code. And I do remember when we would prepare our responses to the call for proposals from societies, we really use the transfer code to make sure that everything that was going to be necessary would be taken into consideration to convey to the usually societies, but doesn't have to be societies, yep. that we were, you know, well experienced with this.
That's a good point.
And the like. And so it really touches on every aspect of the business that that the publishers are in. I know we can go into more detail about it later, but you know, it connects into issues around the manuscript submission system, because there are articles that have been submitted but maybe not published at the time. There are articles that are in a kind of online first or kind of a pre publishing status. It also touches on marketing, because publishers make agreements that the DOIs are going to redirect, and the journal URLs and things like that that are going to be necessary for the receiving publisher to be able to, you know, take the baton and carry forward, and then certainly over into the sales sector to make sure that communications can happen so that the libraries are not caught by surprise and are not alerted to the fact that something is transferred because a researcher has found that it's no longer where they expect it to be. So, you know, it is something that really follows through with the publication life cycle very much.
So there does need to be kind of broad understanding in within a publisher about what it is about, not just one person kind of.
Yeah, I mean, the most important thing I would say when we do have conversations with publishers about transfer is, if you just go through and read it, even though it's not that long, it can seem like it looks like a lot. But most of the things that are represented in the code are actually just good business practice mm-hmm. in general.
Yep.
And yep. so most publishers are probably tracking those things and doing those things as a matter of course already.
So it sort of serves as a checklist, or just kind of covering the basis.
Yeah.
Good. So how should, actually, I want to talk a little bit about the ETOS, or the automatic information piece, and bring Gael into this. Information. So when a journal is transferred, what happens?
Well, it starts even earlier, because actually when a publisher endorses the transfer code of practice, actually the group, the transfer group and the people there in charge just get in touch with the ISS and IC, you know, once the code of practice has been signed by the
ISSN Information Center. Yes.
Yeah. And so what happens there, the working group, I mean, the transfer group gets in touch with us, yes. and actually communicates about the contacts at the publishers who will fill in information on the ISSN portal. So we get the contact, and then we get in touch with the contact at the publishers, and we gave them some, we give them some credentials for them to be able to register on the ISSN portal and fill in information about the title which is being transferred. So with these credentials, the publisher gets access to the portal, fills in information about the title which is being transferred. So the receiving publisher is in charge of this.
Yes.
And information is you know, filled on the portal. And then once this is done, we check, you know, if all fields have been filled in and completed, and we validate the transfer statement in a way. And this information goes to the free journaltransfer.issn.org. So that's the platform where information about transfers is disseminated. So if you go to this journaltransfer.issn.org website, you will find there all transfers that have been done since the inception of the service. So we have retrieved all the files from, you know, the former platform, which was maintained by Manchester University, I think. So that's that was when you know, UKSG was in fact monitoring the service. And so we've retrieved all files from Manchester University, from the former platform, and we've included that on the journal transfer platform. So we get information, you have information there about the receiving publisher, which is this publisher is in charge of, you know, processing the statement and filing the information about the transfer. And you have also information about the transferring publisher, because these two parts are involved. And since the ISS International Center works with publishers and with, of course, end users such as libraries, we have information. I mean, we already have information about all the titles, because usually they all bear ISSN. So it's easy for the receiving publisher to fill in information on the portal, and then we export it on this ETAS service.
And then ETAS alerts subscribers, or?
Exactly. You can, okay. Actually, there is an API, and there is also a RSS feed. So yes. The end user, the librarian, or any scholar or any publisher who wants to track changes can register on the this journal transfer .issn.org and receive information about current transfers. There is also a page with statistics, so you can have a look at statistics and see which publishers are recent, when you know how many titles per receiving publisher have been actually tracked via the service, and also how many titles per transferring publishers have been tracked as well. So you have a specific page to monitor these changes and transfers.
Good. So then, Linda, as someone who gets these alerts, what would you do once you receive a transfer alert?
Well, I think that, yes, I absolutely subscribe to the service. I did for many years while I was managing a library's collection development and periodicals section. But I also do it as a, you know, member of a consortia, because it helps me know what titles are moving from one package to another, because the transfer service both lists the transferring publisher and the receiving publisher. It says when it's going to happen. And so, for example, at our consortia, we negotiate deals for the Wiley package, the Oxford package, the Springer Nature, et cetera, et cetera. So I can see easily that something's going to move from Wiley to Oxford, or vice versa. And so I actually kind of keep a running list. We have like a website for each one of the packages, and I keep track. And I know that the publishers themselves are going to tell me what's happened, but sometimes I'll say, yeah, but what about this other one? And so it's really great to be able to have that email digest. You know, it's kind of the early warning service. Well, you hope it's the early warning service, as long as publishers register their transfers before they happen. And I also, you know, there's a list of compliant publishers that's on the transfer site. So, you know, you can ask if you've got like a publisher package if the publisher isn't actually compliant. I mean, it's part of the licensing process. You can, I think most of the standard license agreements have a clause where they ask that any transfers be transfer compliant. And, you know, the process of signing up is fairly easy. And the other, you know, this issue of the what's the URL before and after. So that's all included in this alerting service. And I think some people don't realize that there's more depth. You search a title or you can search a publisher and you get a list of journal titles and a little bit of information. But if you click on the journal title, it goes into a lot of detail if you use the database. So there's the database, there's the alerting service, and the two of them kind of work together. The other thing that people are always looking for is who hosts the perpetual access. So somebody, which one of those publishers is going to carry on the perpetual access for past subscribers? And it could be either one of the publishers according to the transfer guidelines, but somebody has to step up to the plate. And that's part of what is listed. So I go back to that quite a bit when librarians contact me and say, hey, wasn't I supposed to have access to this? And I can go back and say, well, actually, it's not on this publisher's site. It's on that publisher's site. So, you know, it's either the transferring or the receiving publisher. So all of those things kind of work together. I mean, the negotiation process, librarians and consortia really need to be aware that this is something they should include in their agreements. I mean, we're finding fewer and fewer e-journal publishers that aren't signed up for transfer. But I'd say it's a handful a year that we see. It's the receiving publisher that has most of the responsibilities. So, I mean, they're responsible for registering the action. So we kind of go on the warpath and go find them.
if you hear about a transfer related, so the transfer database is all of the people who are participating in transfer. What if you find out about a transfer activity from a publisher who is not participating in the code of practice? I guess you let them know about it.
Yeah, right. So the committee, the working group, we reach out to those publishers, the ones that we identify each year. We basically search the database and create a list of those who haven't signed up that are involved in a transfer. And so we'll have the specific contact information from the transfer database. And so we can contact those people. And we assign each member of the working group has their list of publishers that they currently are reaching out to. And sometimes it takes us a little while to show them. I mean, we have to find the right person. We have to show them what the guidelines say, because it's nothing, as Heather said, it's nothing that they're not already doing. Yeah. But there might be one or two things that fall through the cracks that they aren't thinking of. And so when we had conferences that were live, we would go up to the table. And I can say I had at least one success. It took me two conferences in a row and several phone calls, but we did get one publisher. And basically they said, we never, ever transfer. I'm like, well, actually, I wouldn't be talking to you if you didn't, because you were a receiving publisher, or you were a transferring publisher, and we see that you haven't signed up. So they were, once I got the right person, they were delighted to sign up. They said, oh, yes, this is obviously the things we're already doing. We support NISO, and we're really kind of embarrassed that we hadn't signed up earlier. So
I think in the world we live in, there's always the possibility that the transfers will take place. So I think you're right. It's not, you can't rule out that someone will never transfer anything. Just my observation. So maybe we can move into talking about the standing committee. Who wants to talk about how stakeholders are represented and what's the standing committee is doing.
I can talk about that a little bit, Nettie, if you want. It's Heather.
Great. Yes. Thanks, Heather.
Somebody already mentioned that there are both publishers and librarians on the committee. So we seek to have a balance. So it's not, one stakeholder group of representatives, dominating the calls. We're organized into three subgroups. So I'm the current chair of the publisher subgroup. And then there's a librarian subgroup and a society subgroup. And the society members are also publishers. And so we work pretty closely with the society subgroup. We get together every couple of months and we talk about the progress towards the schedule for the next update for the code. So we're currently on 3-year cycles to update that. So it's never that far from our minds. We're either just completing one or starting to think about the next one, or we're in the thick of it. There are questions that come in, from vendors or for other types of publishers that we can handle as a group. We also do outreach activities, like Linda mentioned. So if there are upcoming conferences, we'll look at either the exhibits or the virtual exhibitors now and see who might be attending the conference, who can raise transfer in that context. And we also do presentations and occasionally write blog posts ourselves. So we try to keep transfer kind of front of mind. And so we did a really cool presentation around standards a few years ago at SSP, and we were able to incorporate transfer into that. So we just look at educational opportunities that might arise and try to increase general awareness.
Great. Like this phone call. Thanks again for joining. So anyone want to share what kinds of things are being considered for future updates in the next version? Because the transfer was last published in 2019. And as I was putting this teleconference today together, I was thinking, wow, that's just, I initially thought it was just yesterday that we published it. But then I was like, wow, it's 2019. And that's already 2 years ago, or going on 2 years. It's been about a year and a half. So any particular areas that you're investigating for future revisions, or just responding to questions that come in from people with opinions?
Well, that's a good point, Betty. This is Linda. Responding to comments is the really important part of why I was so happy you asked us to do this call, is right now, people that are listening to this call, if you have a question or concern, this is the time to bring it to really any member of the committee or the co-chairs and let us know. Last week, one of the publisher representatives on the committee brought a colleague in to talk to us about some examples of struggles that they were having this year with open access commitment being like a free open access publishing commitment being made prior to an article transferring, prior to the journal transferring to another publisher, and the receiving publisher was like, well, gee, I guess we have to publish this free. Even though the prior version did attempt to address open access assets, maybe we didn't go into enough detail. So that's one of the things that we're going to be looking at. And as you said, if we're at a 3-year cycle, so we're just about to gear up to look at all the comments people have made. And we're very careful to address every comment that comes in has to be, kind of formally responded to, whether it's incorporated or not incorporated, either way, we have to say why. And I think last time we had received some comments about platform when a journal or publisher changes platforms and some of the issues surrounding that. And what ended up was a new working group was formed.
That's
to
right.
take a look at that. So it's a really great process that NYSO has for helping each one of the standards or guidelines to respond to comments. So if anybody's listening and has comments or, you know, questions or wish something were different. And in fact, last time around, I think I made a comment. The list of subscribers had been reportedly, I mean, as a librarian, I don't know what the list of subscribers looks like, but it looked like the list of subscribers included folks that maybe were only subscribing as part of a database or subscribed maybe 10 years ago. And so we worked really hard to clarify that language on the Let's Go Round. So whether the question comes from the standing committee members or it comes from the outside, we're eager to receive those.
That's right. So actually, then that's a good segue into opening the discussion to anyone on the call. It's not required, of course, but if you have a question or a point you'd like to make about transfer, we would love to hear from you. Any questions for Heather, Linda, or Gael, please do pipe up. If you muted your line using the *6 code, *6 should unmute you. And we'd love to hear from you if you've got anything to say.
If there is no question for the time being, Nettie, I just wanted to say something and add a few words after Linda's.
Yes,
because
of course.
After Linda, because actually Linda was right in mentioning the fact that we have the alerting service, ETAS, but we also have a database where you can search for, you know, publishers and see transfers and see which transfers, for example, have been done between, you know, two dates. So that's something rather new compared to the former service. Actually,
yeah.
It has been enhanced when we started accommodating or hosting the ETAS service. Yeah, so that's something important. Another thing which is important is that Linda also mentioned, the perpetual access, and in information which is supplied by the receiving publisher usually includes information about the archiving agency or service which has been selected or which is used. And this is something important too, that, and this information or this data is also included in the database. And our objective is to be able to check this information in ETAS with the Keepers Registry that we also mm-hmm. host, and to compare it and to see whether they match. And for the time being, we have not been able to build this comparison tool, but this is something we would like to do, and we expect to do shortly.
Interesting. Great. Thanks for that. Any other comments from any of you that were things we haven't covered that you think we should be mentioning?
Yeah, Nettie, just two things really quickly that I meant to mention and didn't. This is Heather. I'm currently serving on the counter board, and so I would be remiss not to mention the role that usage statistics play in the transfer, that the transferring publisher under the code is obligated to share 12 months of usage statistics with the receiving publisher. And of course, part of that, just to make sure that there's no interruption in the usage statistics that the librarians need to have access to, you know, for a variety of different reasons. So that is something that is incorporated in the code, and given that the complexities around usage are constantly evolving, I'd say, you know, that's something that the transfer group is always revisiting. Similarly, we did touch on the post-cancellation access, but we didn't mention digital preservation obligations. And so again, with my digital preservation hat on, I'm currently co-chair of the NASIG Digital Preservation Committee. I don't want to get yelled at by any of my committee members. That when you are a receiving publisher, you have to make sure that those digital preservation arrangements don't fall off of the table, because right. they're extremely valid reasons why content needs to be preserved in multiple preservation services. And the Keepers Registry, where you can go and check to see where your content is being preserved, is also something that falls under Gail's purview there at the ISSN Center. So I guess I'd just highlight that scholarly communications is a complex, web of interconnecting responsibilities, and everything, in order for everything to go smoothly, there's lots of people and processes in place to make sure that continues to happen.
So it's important that we all keep communicating with each other and maintain the standards that provide information on how these things should be looked after. So
absolutely.
Good, good. All right. Any questions from anyone in the audience? I'm also going to turn off the recording if you've got a question that you don't want to have recorded, but I'll give a minute for that, a few seconds. All right, so I'm going to stop the recording.